Now let's talk with Ingrid Mattson. Ingrid, thank you for joining us today. It's a delight to have you here and have an opportunity to deepen our understanding about the religion of Islam. I thought we might start by talking about your personal journey a little bit. We mentioned in the introduction that you chose to convert, and I'm wondering what inspired that and what is the essence and the beauty of this Muslim faith for you?
For me, it really was this example of faith in the world. The first Muslims I met, poor West African students living in Paris, not very well accepted by the people of that city as part of the common good, they still maintained a sense of dignity, a sense of generosity. They didn't become angry, but they lived their faith through this compassionate sense of generosity, which they shared with me, another poor student hanging around the city. So it was that appealed to me, that attracted me to see what was the spiritual basis of their presence in the world.
I'd be interested, Ingrid, to know, it seems that your life-changing friendships with those Muslim students in France and also your work in Pakistan to help Afghan refugees, where you met your future husband, it seems to me you were doing ministry. You were doing discipleship about the reduction of human suffering. So what were those attitudes and values in Islam? Did you see a merging of your understanding of the Christian faith and Islam in your conversion?
Absolutely. I was raised Roman Catholic, and when I stopped practicing Catholicism, it wasn't a rejection of the Catholic Church, but at that time my faith had simply left. And it was Islam that gave me back faith in God. But one thing that I always appreciated in my Catholic upbringing was the sense that we were called to alleviate suffering in the world, to show our gratitude to God for what we had, the blessings we had, by demonstrating that, by sharing them with others. And when I became a Muslim, I found that message so strong in the Quran, caring for the poor, showing gratitude to God, not just through your words by saying thanks, but through your deeds, by helping the people of the world and making this a better place, especially for those who are the most marginalized. You know, it's such a resonance between these two traditions. And I think that's one of the reasons why I find work between Christians and Muslims so easy, because it's clear to me that this is just a foundational message in both our traditions.
And what do you find are some of the greater challenges or the misperceptions that people have right now in the Christian-Muslim relations? You talked about it a little bit in your message, but there seems to be a lot of misunderstandings out there that you alluded to.
Certainly many people believe that Muslims are more violent than other people, and that even Islam encourages this violence. Okay. This is a problem that is related to the way we understand scripture. It's one of the reasons I wrote a book on the Quran called The Story of the Quran, to show how the context of the revelation of the Quran needs to be understood so that we can separate those passages that deal with war and conflict and what are the messages for us today. And given the fact that Muslims are now considered to be a quarter of humanity, and that most of them are living very peacefully, in many cases as minorities in countries like India and Russia and China, that most Muslims certainly are not violent people.
In trying to break through these stereotypes of distortions of truth, often fueled by secular media, Ingrid, I wonder if you can help us try to see more clearly the fringe elements. I mean, there's internecine warfare, not only between religions, but among religionists who claim the same faith. So help us understand some of the fringe pieces of Islam trying to bring clarity to the stereotypical feelings.
And that's a great point, Lydia, because in fact, if we look at the kind of violence that has occurred in the last say, 7 or 8 years, we see that more Muslims have died as a result of terrorism by Muslim extremists than non-Muslims. So this is primarily directed at their own societies. And what are these people opposing? Certainly, there are many different messages, some of them more political, economic. But what we see consistently is an authoritarian attitude, a belief that there's one way, my way or the highway. And that really goes against the construction of authority in traditional Islam. We do not have one authority who decides what is right or wrong in our religion. Islam has a tradition of dialogue, bringing together Muslims from across different places to form a consensus or try to approach consensus on issues. So this authoritarian perspective, which can almost be totalitarian, seems in fact more inspired by those kind of 20th century fascist or totalitarian movements than anything from the Islamic tradition. And I think that's something we need to take seriously, is the way that ideologies of the 20th century have really distorted our tradition.
Well, it's a good segue to talk about a common word then that you mentioned in your message as well. This is a document that exists that's constantly evolving. Some people would ask, what can a document itself do? But talk about some of the practical applications of this in the time that we have left here, because it's making an impact in the world in a big way, you would say.
Absolutely. And in the end, we are people of scripture, and right. We are people who have looked to authoritative statements and creeds to show us the bounds or the limits of proper behavior within our traditions, both Christianity and Islam. So it's important when, as I mentioned, when bad ideology comes in the door, that there's something that can refute that. And what we've noticed is that there's such a sense of relief on the part of ordinary Christians and Muslims that they now have a document like the Common Word and the Christian responses to them to say, yes, you should engage with your neighbor of the other faith in doing good work. You are not required to dislike them or keep them at an arm's distance. You will not water down your faith if you work with them for the common good to alleviate human suffering. So although people may say, well, it's just words, we need those words as authoritative so that then we can go out and do those good works with a response to the extremists or fundamentalists in our religion who say, you know, stay away from those other people.
Ingrid, we're so happy you've joined us today. This has been a wonderful conversation. We're going to continue it on the show, I know, in future programs. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Great.